welcome back to the podcast. It's show 142, and we're joined by Mr. Holger and John Farnan. We catch up on what we've been up to pinhole-wise. We go on a few tangents, which, of course, is inevitable. And we have a couple of shout-outs towards the end of folks' work that we really love in the Lensless Podcast Facebook group. Hello, and welcome back to the Lensless Podcast. This is show 142, and I'm joined at last, because it's like herding cats trying to get John and Mr. Holger together, and with time zones and, you know, busy lives. So hello, John and Mr. Holger.
Hello.
Howdy.
So we've got one over in Texas and one up in Scotland. So is it beautiful weather in Texas as well?
No, it looks pretty Scottish here. You know, we're okay. Expecting the solar eclipse on Monday, and nothing but clouds. So,
are you right in its path?
Directly in its path. I could walk out my front door and see it, but unfortunately, it's going to be a smear of clouds and nothing. So we're going to get dark for 4 minutes, and then it's going to go back to normal. We're not going to get to see anything. It's very sad.
Well, it's, you know, the perfect time to bring your pinhole viewer out, isn't it? I suppose in a, you know, if there wasn't any cloud.
I know, and I was prepared for it with glasses and a filter and everything. But I tell you what, this mm-hmm. is very disappointing. Sad. I hate to start the show off on a sad note, but it is going to be cloudy in Texas.
Okay, that sounds like a song. Is it going to be cloudy? Is it going to be cloudy in Scotland? Probably.
Oh, it's always cloudy in Scotland. Well, in the west of Scotland, anyway. It's nice today, apart from the very strong winds. We're getting battered up here today.
Storm Catherine, I think.
That's the one. Yeah.
Or maybe Kate.
Yeah,
Storm Princess of Wales.
Yeah, Storm Katie. It's very windy, but it's really mild. So I take it this is coming from the south.
Of course, yeah, that's where all the good things come, and we just blow them up your way now and again.
Yeah, I'll not answer that one.
I'm in shorts for the first. Well, no, I've been in shorts for the last week or so. It'll be July before you have shorts on in Scotland, won't it?
You know, I tend to wear shorts about the house occasionally. I haven't worn them during the winter because it's been too cold, but it might be about time to start getting about again. Yeah,
that's it. Get the legs showing. Okay, so what we're going to do? We haven't got a guest. It was bad enough just getting you two guys organised. So the idea for this show is to have a bit of a catch up. Hopefully, talk about what we've been doing pinhole wise. And I've uploaded a few pictures into the Lensless Podcast Facebook group. Mr. Holger's uploaded, because he's controversial, stuff to Flickr. I think some of this stuff he has been uploading into the Lensless Podcast Facebook group. But Flickr's a lovely place, as we've often spoken about, to go and view images. And we do have a Lensless Podcast Flickr group, which I've completely forgotten about.
Again? How many times is that now, Andrew? You forgot.
Oh, loads of times. I don't know the last time I actually went in there and said hello to anybody. And so hopefully you two guys... John, you share into it, don't you?
I do, yeah. But I haven't shared anything on Flickr for ages. It's unusual for me, because normally I'm on Flickr a lot. But I haven't been on it for... Let me have a quick look. Okay, last time I uploaded was October. Wow.
I've uploaded some things, but I opted out of paying a few years ago when, you know, I moved jobs and we were counting pennies and trying to organise ourselves financially. I thought, well, I don't need to be paying for this. And anyway, at the time they were still letting you post as many pictures as you want. But they came to a point where they said, you know what, we're now going to do what we said we're going to do. And if you haven't paid, you're going to lose anything above 1,000 photographs. So it's a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
So I'm rapidly approaching that limit again now.
Are you? Well, that's not good. I've got so many I've got 43,829 photos on Flickr, but most of them are in a private backup, you know, streaming from my phone. So it just automatically backs everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, goodness me.
Yeah.
Your, yeah, my stuff just goes onto the Apple Cloud thing, whatever that is.
Oh, mine goes everywhere. Literally everywhere. SmugMug,
Amazon. You're single-handedly responsible for the global climate change. You know that, don't you?
Well, do you know, I plant trees every month for a pay. I get trees planted every month to offset my carbon footprint.
Yeah, but is that not just greenwashing?
Well, it's helping me feel a little bit better. But
it's greenwashing. So they plant all these trees by the motorways and things, and they often die, don't they? Because they're just, you know, either the ground's rubbish or it's inappropriate.
Well,
you're probably paying for those twigs that you see by the motorway that are all dying because they're being gassed by people's emissions.
No, that's the council tax it pays for them. I'm paying for trees to get planted in areas that have been deforested by us, so they're less likely to die from pollution. So I feel quite good about that, Andrew, because it offsets anything I do for the year.
I'm particularly aggravated by the recent post by some stupid woman online, on the BBC News, I think it was. She was going on about on the radio. She's going on about vinyl, and I think people like Taylor Swift is selling really expensive vinyl. Yeah, I get it, but having never not played vinyl over the years, and someone said, "Oh, don't buy vinyl; it's just a trendy young person thing." I said, "Yeah, I know. I've been playing it for years and years and years,
my whole life."
And they said, "And it's really bad for the environment." I said, "Oh, for goodness sake, is there nothing we can do?" I said, "What about all this John Farnham putting all his pictures online, and the amount of heat energy that radiates out, and the CO2 emissions from Amazon and all the cloud storage nonsense, you know, that we all love to use, and you're going on about, you want to deprive me of playing a bit of vinyl? Get a life," that's what I say.
Well, if it comes down to it, the internet is bad for the environment, but nobody's getting rid of that.
No. So please leave my vinyl alone.
Is that your rant over the week, Andrew? Have you upset enough people?
No, I've probably got a few more to do. Anyway, there we are. So what have you been up to, John? Do you want to talk about something that's not Pinhole, I think?
Well, you know, I always talk about things that are not Pinhole, but I've been refining my KMZ FT2 cartridges.
Yeah, okay, just stop there because, you know, people who use jargon and acronyms just explain yourself, please.
Well, there is nothing that can explain it more than KMZ FT2. It's a crazy panorama camera, right? It has a 35mm negative that's 110mm long, right? This thing is just bonkers. You need a 4x5 enlarger to print it. It's got a 50mm lens. It has three speeds, 400, 200, and 100, and none of them are any good for most films. And it's got a F5 lens, but it produces the most remarkable pictures. Just crazy looking. Really wide, but on a 50mm lens, which is really unusual for me, because I normally shoot really, really wide. Everything's really wide, so it's quite a kind of learning curve for them. But that's also making me look at some of my older Pinhole cameras I've been designing in 3D. And looking back on them, and I think I'll start working on them again to see if I can finally do one rather than getting bored and then moving on to the used one of James's or something, you know.
What, you being Reality So Subtle's UK ambassador, you mean?
Yeah, it seems to be an unofficial title. There's no money involved here. Mm. I just love these cameras, you know, and I've got most of them, but I don't know why. Everybody doesn't love his cameras.
You haven't got it. You haven't got his prototype MDF 8x10, 5-hole pinhole camera, though, have you?
No, I don't.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah, but do you ever use
ambassador.
It? Do you ever use it?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I use it. I used it at the same shoot that I'm going to be talking about in a minute, and I've got the 8x10 film. I've got the 8x10 sheet languishing in the darkroom, and. I've done a few landscapes And some I've shared, some I haven't. But I'm contact printing those big negatives, you know. Although now I've got the Epson B750 that I was given recently, I can scan an 8x10, I guess. I don't really like scanning anything, really. So the cartridge for this, what are you talking about? Cartridge for the FTZ thing? What's that?
It's a little.
Don't you just load, put a roll of film in it?
No.
Yeah. Is this 35 millimeter?
It is. Yeah, but it has a bespoke cartridge. Just when you thought the camera.
Which you can't find anywhere easily, presumably.
You cannot get them for love nor money.
I'm assuming this is a Russian camera, right?
It is. It's a Russian camera. They made about 16,000 of them. About half for export and half for the Russian market. It's a tiny little camera. And when you see pictures of it online, you think, that's a really big camera. But when you hold it in your hand, it's absolutely tiny. And it fits in your pocket and it's good. But yeah, it's just a bit quirky. But the canisters are one of the more quirky things about it, because most of the cameras that are sold now do not have the canisters. They only came with two, which meant you could get one roll of film, one for uplift and one for rolling on. But you really need to use it somewhere between 6 and 8. You know, so you've got a few rolls.
So do you have to load like from a bulk roll into these canisters, or does a 35mm film sit inside it somehow like an adapter?
No, you need to roll it from either a bulk or unroll a 35 into it. I just pull out an arm's length of bulk and load it into it and go from there. But you can't use a normal canister. I believe you can cut them down, but I've never tried it. Mm. I've just built them on the 3D printer.
Interesting. Well, I know you have one, and I know Dave has one, and I think Simon Forster probably has one because he's got those things.
Yes, yes, I've got two.
Is this like the wide lux where the lens sweeps across?
It is, yeah. It's just like the wide lux. But being a wide lux user as well, I would say it's nowhere near as complicated. But it works in the same principle, a sweeping lens which sweeps at a set speed, you know, across the frame, and it exposes every little bit, you know, individually, so you can hold the camera. I've got a wide lux, and you can hold it like 1/8 of a second exposure, but you can hold it steady, which is absolutely brilliant. It holds for 6 seconds while it's taking the exposure, and it doesn't look as if it's been handheld at all.
So, what are you talking about, the wide lux or the
the wide lux?
Okay,
the KMZ is all fast speed. It's very fast.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd love either of those cameras. I have two now, Horizon compacts, you know, I was going to say cheap, but even these things aren't cheap now, are they? Ridiculous. So I've got two of these, and they both work really well. There's no weird light leaks going on, and it's but they're fairly limited. In fact, they only have two speeds, fast and slow. And but to be honest, you know, if you stick 100 speed in the summer and 400 speed in the winter, it's fine, you know, or a 200 speed color film in most conditions, it's fine. And so the Horizon compacts are pretty good. I'm thinking of taking pretty much makes it a point and shoot camera, because you've got no choices to make, really. You know, so I love that. And I think it's probably going to accompany me on my quiet Fido. It's going to accompany me on my Vietnamese travels next year.
What are you taking, pinhole wise? Have you thought about it yet?
Well, probably just James's 6x6F, I should think, because that comes with me on most trips. Probably just that, because I'm only trying to take one bag, so I'm almost certainly going to make a camera purchase, which I make very few camera purchases, and I think I'm going to buy the Lomo 120 wide camera, you know, the 120.
Don't you have one already?
No. Do you?
Yeah.
All right. Do you, Want to sell it to me?
I can sell you for what I bought it at.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. Well, I'm thinking of buying a new one, so that's my budget, you know.
Is that the pinhole one, yeah?
No.
No.
No. No, it's a lens camera. Like LCI, sorry, LCI 120 is what I meant to say. What did I say?
You said LOMO.
What is LOMO?
Lomography.
Yeah, Lomography LCA 120 camera.
I think you just added LCA in there. I thought you were talking about wide-angle pinholes.
No, not pinhole at all. We were talking about pinholes, and I suddenly leapt onto... You asked me what cameras I'm taking, and I said, pinhole-wise, I'm probably going to take James's 120 6x6F camera, and film cameras, lens cameras, I'm going to make a purchase. I'm going to purchase the Lomo LCA 120.
Right, okay. So there's a segue into lenses then.
Yeah. So I'm going to buy, and I'll probably then just complement it with, the Horizon will probably have color film in because it's Vietnam. I don't know what sort of film. I might have to buy two Lomos, one for black and white, one for color, but I won't really. And then I was just thinking about taking my Rolleiflex with me for other color shots. Uh-huh. Probably, you know. I don't. And then it's all the hassle of what do I do with film and stuff, you know.
What kind of film are you thinking of shooting? I know you said color, but what kind?
Well, it's whatever I've got a stash of at the time. It'll probably be gold 200, I would think, because I know I can make in bright sunshine. I know I can make really nice looking RA4 prints from gold. When it's a bit cloudier, I don't quite like the results so much with the RA4 prints. They tend to take on a bit of a yellowy tone, which I struggle to get rid of. But in the bright sunshine, lovely. Yeah. So I've got some of that, and if I can get, I might get some Ektar. For the pinhole camera, so Ektar and gold probably.
Okay, yeah, gold's beautiful in the 200. It's really good to see it in the 120. Really nice.
Well, I use it a lot in my Rolleiflex and for sort of portraits of people I meet. So I've got and then make prints. So that's probably one of the things I'm going to do while I'm out there.
Okay, cool. You're going to get them developed over there or bring them back?
Well, I was talking to James Lane earlier, and he was trying to convince me to develop film while I'm there. And he said something about his chemicals being hand luggage safe. But I'm not taking photographic chemicals in a hand baggage through an airport. I'm going to end up with... really?
To Vietnam?
Yeah, what's or wrong with you, James?
Yeah. That's not a good idea, mate.
I know what I'll do. I'll take a pouch of ID11 powder with me.
That doesn't look suspect.
I'm certainly not packing a Jobo. That's not happening.
No. And he said, unless I misunderstood him, I don't think James listened to this show, so we can talk about it. I think he said his 510 pyro was airport friendly or something. I said, no, I'm not taking pyro, any kind of film chemicals through the airport. It's bad enough trying to get a bottle of water through, isn't it? Would you mind just drinking this, sir? Make sure it's safe. Oh, yeah.
I had that recently.
Maybe he's worried about the X-ray scanners ruining his film.
Oh no, I am. Yeah, certainly. We were flying from Heathrow into Vietnam, and Heathrow do have CT scanners, and their stated policy, because I asked them just this week, their stated policy with photographic film is for all of it to be swabbed, so it doesn't go through. It's swabbed for explosives or drugs or whatever. And then if it's positive, they take you to one side and give you a strip search, apparently.
Yeah, there's a difference between stated policy and reality.
Well, we'll see. But we're not going from Heathrow now. Heathrow was Malaysian Airlines and Gatwick is Singapore Airlines. So we're going to Singapore Airlines because Malaysia lost an aeroplane once and that seemed to... I don't think they ever found it. So we're not going to take the chance.
Lost luggage.
We're not going to take the chance. So we're going from Gatwick, and I've no idea what Gatwick has, whether they've got CT scanners or not. But I'm pretty convinced that one pass through CT scanners has effed up your film. Or black and white, you might. Have either of you seen that YouTube? This is nothing to. Well, I suppose it is to do with pinhole. It's general chat, isn't it? That YouTube video from Lena Bessanova? Lena?
No.
No, I haven't.
So she did a 40-minute, 2 months ago. I've only just seen it, actually. It's a 40-minute video where she. So go to a YouTube channel and watch it. It's really interesting. She goes into Photo Impex in Berlin and buys what must be about $3,000 worth of photographic film.
Oh, no.
So she must, I think, she must have sponsorship. She mentioned Silver Grain Classics, the magazine, so whether they had some involvement in it, I don't know. Anyway, she buys all this film. And then she shoots for every stock, so pretty much every colour film you can think of, and a number of black and whites in different film speeds. She does a reference photograph so that she can check it against once the same image has been through scanners and whatnot. And it must have taken her forever to do this. And to cut to the chase, you can clearly see in nearly all the colour stocks, no matter what speed, a shift in colour, a dullness. The colours are affected. They're sort of desaturated. They go muddy. And after a couple of passes through CT, the image just looks rubbish, you know? Black and white seems to add base fog, which is not probably such an issue. But she didn't experience any sort of wavy interference lines, which some people spoke about. And an X-ray, of course, she says, is cumulative, and I think we all know that. And
yeah.
Airports, if it's below 800, I think you'll have a hard job getting them to hand check it if it's just an X-ray film. X-ray machine. I've had stuff go through X-ray stuff and X-ray machines, and it seems okay. But then I didn't have a reference photograph, like Lena says. You know, she said, how do you know if you haven't done a reference photograph to begin with to compare it afterwards?
That's true. I haven't noticed any problems going through X-ray.
No, not X-rays. Me neither. But CT, I think you need to. But it's a very interesting listen and watch.
Yeah, I don't have an empirical data on it, but my film got separated from me in Thailand Airport, or Bangkok Airport, and it went through a CT scanner, and it was fine. That's all I can say.
What film was that?
That was All Sorts. It was everything from Ektar, but saying that, my Ektar did have some weird and wonderful shifts on it. But
Some of the stock, you have to go and look at her video, because some stocks, after one pass through a CT scan, seemed on the face of it okay, you know. And then, but it's only when you compared it to the reference one, there was clearly some shift. But whether it was enough to worry you, I'm not sure. But you need to go and take a look at it. But I think if you can avoid it, it's better, really.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I only did it by accident, and I don't recommend anybody does it as a default, because you don't want to damage your film, you know, the amount it costs you. Damaging it. But mines were fine, and I always use the Bellini anti-fogging agent. And with my films, I didn't notice it.
Okay. Mm. All right. So you talked a little bit about TMZ? KMZ?
TMZ,
TMZ,
yeah.
What's TMZ?
TMZ's a film.
That's T-Max. Is it T-Max?
No, TMZ. Oh, yeah, TMZ, yeah.
TMZ. Okay, well, there we are.
I don't know, it's wide of, you know.
You hinted before, being Reality So Subtle's ambassador, that there's some news that you're going to tease us with?
Well, I'll just tease you a little bit. James is, you know, he's like a mad scientist, you know, and I've been in engineering stuff. He's working on something really exciting just now. But he didn't say to me I could share it, but it does sound really exciting.
Well, I was meant to be recording with him just last week I think it was last week or the week before, for a spotlight manufacturer thing. So maybe I can prize it out of him when we reschedule it, probably in a week's time or so.
Yeah, see if you can prize it out of him. I know I will definitely be getting one. Okay. That much is a given.
Of course.
Yes, I'm absolutely loving his big wide sweeping camera he's got going just now, because he's been talking about that for years, but I think he's finally made it after all these years with it's like 8x10 film negatives.
Yeah, this is where it's like a big, reality so subtle 6x6, but on big wooden spools, and he's taping together 8x10 X-ray film or something, isn't he?
Yes, yeah, absolutely bonkers. But you know, if it keeps him happy, it keeps him out of trouble. Yeah. For it, you know.
bless his cotton socks.
Okay. Yes, yeah, now if he could miniaturize it, oh wow, that would be brilliant.
Yeah, fancy that. There's a thought. What if you take that huge camera, James, and make a 6x6 version of it?
Brilliant.
Okay, enough of your nonsense, John. What about you, Michael? You've been posting some stuff to Flickr. There's a picture of. He's not a muffler man, is he? But he's a. See, I know what a muffler man is. Do you know what a muffler man is, John?
No, but it sounds a bit dodgy. Are you sure we've got the right podcast here?
A muffler man.
Muffler man.
I think he used to be a muffler man.
Yeah, he's been turned into a cowboy, hasn't he? He's a muffler man.
Yeah,
gone all cowboy.
Man.
Muffler.
Muffler, as in muffler on your car.
Silencer.
Oh, a silencer, right? Okay. Yeah.
So the big bit that goes on the so across America. I don't know how many of them there still are. There's these big giants made out of, you know, resin or fiberglass.
Oh,
and they'd be outside. Yep. They'd stand outside of garages, you know, exhaust places, and they'd be holding, a big muffler.
Oh yeah,
an exhaust, you know, to show, because everyone's, you know, if you're in Texas, no one can read, so you need to have it's a bit like in. You know, in the UK, back in the day when no one could read, you know, and they used to have, that's why they had signs outside shops, wasn't it? And like the people outside tobacconists, you know, the Indians or Native Americans, they weren't called Native Americans then, they were called Indians. So they'd have them outside tobacco shops. And then, of course, you knew you were outside a tobacco shop for some reason. I don't know why, but you did. So in America...
How many holes are you going to dig for yourself in this?
So muffler men are... a thing, and many of them have been repurposed to, you know, hold cups of coffee or something. I don't know.
Yes, well, this muffler man specifically was a Santa Claus at one time, and now, of course, he's been big techs for the last 50 years. So,
is that what he is? So, this is Holger Week. You shot this,
So Holger I've got some older developed film. Obviously, I've, you know, most of my film goes into a hat until I say, okay, it's too much. Let's get some of this developed. So I've got some shots on here. Oh, that's from Holger Week. I always do a Black Friday pinhole where I just kind of, instead of going shopping, I go around and I take pinhole pictures. And then, of course, if you're looking at my feed here, you know, that's my brother, my sister, all my girls. You know, I took Holger shots during Christmas, on Christmas Day.
Is that this tree? It doesn't look very Christmassy, does it? It looks all sunny.
Well, that's the pinhole effect, right? It's
it turns snow into summer's day.
And then a couple of those are, you know, I took a page out of your book there, because every time I go somewhere, I take a pinhole with me, and I'm often shooting the airports.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to do that a lot, really. Well, I suppose that was when I traveled more and I just wanted something to alleviate the tediousness of it all. But not so much these days. It's good, though. I do enjoy seeing pinhole cameras used as little diary records of what folk have been up to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, getting it through the airport, because, you know, I normally have film in my Ondu, and, of course, that always has to be handed over to TSA, and I'm like, please don't open it. Please don't open it. Just swab the outside.
Yeah,
I tried that at Sherpal, but it didn't go down too well.
Did they insist on opening it?
No, they didn't insist on opening it, but what they did is they insisted on seeing me taking a frame with each camera.
Really?
So yeah, I had to take a frame, especially the Widelux cameras. They were really, really about. But one of the guys came over and he's like, oh, it's a Widelux, woo! And he got all excited and he kind of backed down a bit at that point.
The only time I've been through Schiphol Airport, it was that this. I seem to recall, well, two things: walking for thousands of miles between terminals. Or, yes. You know, it's just huge. I had to sit down and have a coffee halfway across. It was a huge airport, and then get to this wherever I was flying to or from. I seemed to be side pushed into this little area where the folks were going through security, and it was a like its own private little security area. Very strange. And the guy, things went through, and the guy wasn't even looking at the screen. I mean, I don't know what he was doing, but he was just miles away. And I thought, well, if that's airport security for you, you know.
Oh, good times. I've got a picture of the security lady at Schiphol from my last visit, because she made me take a picture on the wide locks. So I just pointed at her.
Goodness me.
Yeah, it's, but, you know, I thought, well, it's there and I'm not unloading it, because one of them had a filament broken in it. So you know how occasionally you get a reloaded 35 mil spool and it just comes off. So I couldn't unload it, or I would have just stuck it through, you know.
So you got some pictures from the airport, Michael. Yeah. So are they pin? They're pinhole, aren't they? They are. Yes, Dallas.
Yeah, they're pinhole. Yeah, the palm trees, the airport. I love the fact that, you know, the pinhole captures everything, like that dirty window that I'm shooting through. Yeah. I mean, you know, it is what it is. It's everything's in relative focus. So.
Yeah. So. Are you, how often are you using pinhole cameras, just on special occasions then, or do you, are you getting fully into the habit of taking it with you wherever you go?
I've got two go-to cameras in my bag. One obviously is going to be a Holga, and the other is probably my Ondu. And so I generally have one of those with me, whether I'm going to work or wherever I'm going. So, if I do a business trip, more than likely, I'm not going to shoot Holga, but I do throw in the Ondu, because I've got a lot of time in an airport that, you know, to have a nice long exposure.
Yeah, they're great places for that. And when I used to go out for meals with groups of people at exhibitions and things, I'd always set the pinhole camera up behind where we were sitting and just then forget about it for the next hour or so. You know, and that was always interesting.
Good times.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to hear what I've been up to?
Yeah, what have you been up to?
Well, I haven't actually done a lot of pinhole photography, but I was very pleased to finally realize something that's been on. I very rarely have ideas about, you know, a specific shoot or an image, but driving my grocery delivery van around one of the Fenland market towns, a place called Chatteris, I kept driving past this cemetery, right? And the cemetery had these iron gates, and I've immediately got a Smith song buzzing around my head. But anyway, once you get past the iron gates, there's an entrance pathway that goes up into the horizon. So it's sort of, you know, it's at an angle, it's an incline, and it's tree lined, and then there's gravestones off to the side. And I just had this image of someone holding an umbrella. It would have to be my wife. I don't have any other models, really. Standing on this pathway in some form or other. So when my mate Jimmy Hickford came to stay a few weeks ago for the weekend, I said, why don't we have a day out in Chatteris, which is, you've probably got similar places that you really wouldn't want to go and have a day out in Scotland, you know, like places on the outskirts of Glasgow. Where you just don't want to leave your car for too long. Actually, Chatteris isn't too bad. In my mind, it had a poor reputation, but having spent a lot of time there recently delivering people's groceries, it's an all right Fenland small town. The trouble is, on a Saturday afternoon, it's mostly closed, but the cemetery is open. So I loaded up Mike Walker's 4x5 camera with the longer cone, 110mm cone on 4x5, which is slightly wide, but not as wide as, you know, some that we might be using. And I also took my 8x10 James Guerin pinhole camera with me, the one with five pinholes. Both were loaded up with Fuji HRU blue sensitive film. And I also had cut down some stuff that I was calling X-ray film, which Agfa film, which I think probably is that, but it's another blue sensitive one. And they both came out roughly the same. So I guess it's very similar speed, 80 to 100 ISO. And so I loaded up this film in these two cameras, and we got to the cemetery, and I said to my missus, I told her to bring a spotted umbrella with her. And we did various iterations of this shot while the sun was out, and then it went in. And somehow I got her standing right next to the camera, because that 8x10 is insanely wide, and the 4x5 not so. So I got her standing in different locations, walking and standing away at different rates. So the idea was to try and get a couple of images of her, you know, ghost-like images. Something that I'm not always successful at, but I've got one on 8x10 that worked well, but the one that worked best was on the 4x5 X-ray film. And I have uploaded it to the Facebook group a little while ago. The negative is scratch free. That's probably just down to luck more than judgment. But I am trying to take care in the darkroom when I cut these things down now, more care than I used to. And I think that's where the majority of the scratches would come from. So yeah, I was very pleased. I'm going to make a darkroom print of it. My scanning ability is a bit rubbish, really. So it's there, and you can see it. I can't see it now. I can't even find it, but it was there.
Well, Andrew, it's a lovely shot, but my first question is, how do you convince your wife to wear just a coat and pose?
Well, because it's really hot, you know?
Well, I know, but she, you know, I'm assuming, I know if I look closer that she's probably wearing jeans or something like that. But it looks like she's not wearing jeans. So
I actually now can't find it, which is just ridiculous because I've only just uploaded it. I'm scrolling down. Facebook is weird, isn't it? I'm scrolling down, and I seem to have a picture from someone called Mr. Holger, yeah. Christmas tree.
See if you go into the lensless.
Go above the Christmas tree, or we have to refresh.
Yeah. Get a lensless podcast and then click on recent media, Andrew, and you'll be listening.
Yeah, I'm in the lensless podcast.
Yeah, just go into the right hand side if you're on your laptop and go to recent media.
Where's that then?
On the right hand side.
Recent media? I've never even seen that.
Have you not?
Yeah.
Are you on a laptop or, you know, a computer, or is it a mobile phone?
Well it says media. Okay, I found it. Yeah. So I found the three pictures I've uploaded which are to do with this discussion of my three types of X-ray film, the picture itself. And it does, yeah, you're right. She does look like she's got bare legs. No, it doesn't look like she's got bare legs.
You can see
she's either got very wrinkly legs, and but it's quite clear that she's got jeans on. But that was how I visualized the picture. So I'm very pleased with the exposure, which I just metered off the grass. And then James had given me some reciprocity figures to use, which I think was just adding a stop in this case. And I developed it in, again, as per his instructions, and other ways, just do as I'm told, in Rodinal 1 to 100, but he always talked about, I think, 5 minutes or 6 minutes. I think I gave this 7 or 8 because I kept looking at it under the red safe light, which is just really hard to do anyway. Mm. And I thought, well, I'll give it a bit of extra oomph. But I think the exposure's fine. The shadows are there, and the highlights are pretty well contained. So
is the X-ray film like ortho film? You can develop it under red light.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've got a beehive. I've got Ilford 902 safe lights in my dark room for normal sort of Ilford multigrade type paper. But for other papers, some FOMA papers, some when I'm doing lith printing, and for medical X-ray film, I'm using a 15 watt bulb in a Kodak safe light, a beehive with one of their red. I don't think it's the really deep red. It's a normal red filter, and I've got it bouncing off the ceiling, so it's pretty dim in there, but it's enough for me to see what I'm doing, and it seems to work okay.
Talking paper, Andrew, I see Shanghai have launched a new paper, you know, Shanghai Philips.
Have they?
Yes.
Well, from my last understanding in terms of their film was that it was Oru, I can never say it, you know.
That is.
Well, is or was, whether it will continue to be, who knows? But so what? Whose is this paper then? Is it presumably not something they're making?
No, they're making it. Oh. Well, they make the Oru film there as well. They
do they?
It. Yeah, they quote it.
Okay.
It's not done in Germany. It's done in the factory. So they have the recipe for quoting it. That's my understanding from their wholesaler. So they quote it there. It's obviously a lot cheaper to quote it there. But this new film, it's got a lovely texture to it, Andrew. And it's got quite a contrast, quite a kick to it. I put a film through it, it last week and compared it to the new Ilford. And it's maybe coming out to like in a grade 5, whereas the Ilford's coming out of a grade 2, I think, is standard. It's quite contrasty, but it's nice.
Well, you know, I went in the well for so you're sidetracking me again. Let's just finish this because I will mention some darkroom things I've been doing. The reason I wanted to do this picture is I wanted to get more use of a pinhole camera, which isn't super wide. And if you look at this image, it almost looks like it's done with a normal film camera. You know, it's not, it's being Mike Walker's 4x5 pinhole camera is insanely sharp.
Uh-huh.
And it almost doesn't look like pinhole, which, you know, is, I'm never sure that's good or bad. Sometimes it looks so sharp, it just looks like it's done with a crappy lens camera. Certainly doesn't have there's no light fall off. It's superbly evenly illuminated. But being pinhole, of course, it lends itself to this sort of creativity. But I wanted to deliberately, I've had the 110 cone, because Mike's camera takes these cones and he has three, the 150, 110 and the 75. So the 75 is pretty wide on 4x5, and the 110 is semi-wide, and the 150 is sort of normal in inverted commas. So I wanted to force myself to use a more of a normal inverted commas focal length pinhole camera, and so the easy thing for me to do rather than make one is just use Mike's longer cone. But it's finding subjects really where I can translate the vision, you know, to it. Cause the tendency is always to get your wide pinhole camera and put it up close to something. And we all love those pictures, but taking a longer picture, a longer focal length and using it and creating some images with it. So it's one of the things I wanted to spend more time on this year, really. So this was a trial, a test to see whether I could translate some vision into reality. And it appears I can, at least in this instance.
Yeah, I like that. It does look good. But you need to get different socks, Andrew. I just flicked past that.
The other picture is these three stocks of film. Both if you look in the photograph, there's in the Lensless Podcast Facebook group, there's box that I was given of Thermo Scientific ones, which I've been calling Agfa, which I'm convinced that you, John, told me that it's what it was, but I might just be making that up.
I think it is.
And, then there's Fuji medical stuff, which I've now demonstrated that you can actually get lovely pictures with, and other folks do as well, James in particular, and you don't get scratches if you're careful. And then I've got this huge, huge box of that I don't know what to do with. So I'm open to suggestions. It's made by Eastman Kodak Company. That shows how old it is. And it's dated 1998. Kodak Scientific Imaging Film Biomax. And it's in a box. It's single-sided emulsion because it's got a notch code. And it's 35 by 43 centimetres. So is that sort of 20 by 16 size? Must be something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty big. I would just chop it up, Andrew, even if it's a bit rough.
It's about 17 by 15 inches, well, the box is.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's like 13 by 17 or something like that.
Well, inches.
I'm sorry. I'm speaking American.
Whatever. Yeah. No, we're bilingual here. Dealing both.
We're okay with inches here. It's just it depends what age you are. You know, I get taught inches and centimeters. My wife, who's just marginally older than me, only get taught centimeters. So yeah, I'm both.
But. Yeah, me too, to an extent. So I want to use it. I don't know what speed it is. I have no idea. Doesn't say. I don't. Well, none of these things really say, do they? So if anyone out there, have you used anything called Kodak, John, Scientific Imaging Film? Biomax MR.
Yeah.
Single emulsional film, maximum revolution and clarity, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, just tell me how to rate it. No.
I would rate it at 50 and see how it goes.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, just go for it. But honestly, Andrew, I can't unsee those slippers.
I think the only X-ray film I've shot has been the film washi.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Don't know. Well, I don't know what that is. I do know what it is, but I know what
X-ray.
Yeah, but I don't know what I know what film washi is, but I don't know what, and I know they do all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff. And I have used a roll in the past of one of their versions that produced a sort of paper. It was like paper on a roll. Very interesting, very high contrast it ended up being.
Yeah, that's the stuff on the actual washi paper, isn't it?
Yeah, on the washi paper, yeah.
Right.
It made a lovely print, salt print, I seem to remember. I think that's because it was just full of contrast and tonality. It was, it was full of contrast, really, but it seemed to make a nice salt print back in the day.
It has absolutely no blue sensitivity whatsoever.
Yeah, I think that was the problem.
Yeah, none. You know, I tried shooting it in Scotland, and it.
So, someone in the Lenses Facebook group was asking me, asking generally about. They said they'd heard me or us prattling on about this double-sided X-ray film, and. Then they got the jitters because of, it's going to get scratched to hell. Well, it doesn't always get scratched to hell if you're careful. And what's the difference between blue and green sensitivity? And in reality, I said, probably not a lot, really. I mean, I'm assuming this, John, you're a clever chap. This Fuji HRU, which I think is blue sensitive.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I've used it. It pulls the skies out. Okay, so
yeah, so I've got skies in here. So with an ortho type film, I'm going to get myself in the right pickle here. The old fashioned ortho chromatic films wouldn't really show up any skies, would they? The skies would go
white.
Really white. Oh, that's because they're really blue sensitive, and the negative becomes so dense because it's the blueness is overpowering in the image, and so when they're printed, it's not, you know, you're not going to see anything, are you, really, apart from
I think they used to just slip in skies or use cotton wool.
Yeah, I think they just used to use two negative sandwiched together, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
So if it's green sensitive, then it's gonna be the green part of the negative is gonna be very dense, and so it's like putting a green filter in front of your pan chromatic film. You're gonna lighten the greens, aren't you? I guess. Is that right?
Yeah, sounds about right to me. But I'm terrible with filters. I use red filters.
I think red
filters, right. And red filters. Yeah.
I normally say these things with so much confidence that everyone believes them, but I was just doubting myself as I was saying it.
Don't worry about it. Just keep repeating it and everybody will believe you and it'll become fact, no matter what.
It'll eventually be truth.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you know all about that in America.
Absolutely.
Oh,
I don't know what this... there's a load of stuff on the back. Look, so this Biomax film, maximum performance for biological imaging... So it says Kodak Biomax films are suitable for manual or automatic processing, blah, blah, blah. And then it gives quotes a Kodak developer, which I've never heard of. Yeah, none of that's terribly helpful. For use with a red GBX2 Safelite filter. So, okay, and a 15-watt bulb. Okay, so that's something. Should not be exposed to the Safelite conditions for more than a minute. It doesn't tell me anything about using it in a pinhole camera. Stupid, stupid Kodak.
Andrew, you've got lots of it. Chop it up into wee bits.
I don't know how to chop it up though.
Well, just do it with the scissors.
Yeah, just grab some scissors.
Yeah, scissors. That's what I do. I mean, some of my films are as rough as, you know.
But I like to cut it precise so I can put it in my 4x5 holder.
Oh, jeez, right.
Get it in the ballpark. Get it in the ballpark. Yeah, that's all you have to do.
What you do is get a piece of cardboard, right, that's done 4x5, and basically just use that as a template.
Yeah, okay, I can work it out. You don't need to.
But it doesn't need to be perfect. You know?
Don't need to mansplain it to me.
Yeah, oh no, really? A wee bit of roughness around the edges will be all right, mate, you know?
Well, I know that's your style.
Yeah, okay. I'm as rough as they come.
So that's my project for this year. Well, one of my little projects is to use that camera more and the X-ray film. So I've got loads of this X-ray film and it's, you know, it's great. Love it.
Apparently there's a Flickr group for that Biomax film.
Is there?
Yeah. And they've been shooting it to 80 ISO.
Okay, well, that's more or less what you said.
Yeah. That's interesting. Rodinal 1-100, 7 minutes. There you go.
Well, it sounds like it's much the same, doesn't it?
Yeah, usual.
Except that it's not double sided. So, interesting. Okay, so I'll cut some of that down then, following your expert advice.
Yeah, just get a new pair of scissors, mate. You know what I mean?
But I just very quickly then, before we talk about things on the talk about some other people other than us or me. I've been in the darkroom, and what's your favourite paper for darkroom work, John? Michael, do you do any darkroom work? I've probably asked you this before, but
you know, I haven't done any recently, but I did get myself a lovely 4x5 enlarger, so I'm hoping to do some here pretty soon.
What did you buy?
You asked me the technical question. I mean, as you probably, if you watched any of the videos, you know that Don's is moving from his current store of over 25 years to a new one. So he's having to offload a bunch of stuff. And I happened to snag a really nice 4x5 enlarger and a bunch of old paper and things like that. So I'm hoping there'll be a lot to come out of that.
Nice.
So this is you want to just get your plug in for the videos you do with Todd?
Sure. Hey, we just got done doing one. So we're doing the Don's Used Photo videos, which come out once every 2 weeks. Todd actually just found a whole box of Fujifilm FP3000B.
That's
everybody's favorite 4x5 peel apart film.
Yeah. How big a box?
It was almost full, so that a whole case is 60. I think he said he had 59 of them.
Geez, that man could nearly retire on that if he gets it right on eBay. You know?
But where did he find them, though? I mean, you don't just find them, do you? Did he find them like in the corner of his lockup garage?
He found them in a back room. Yes.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, yes, yeah, super exciting. He's very excited to find. I mean, he's already sold some. There's a instant photography group event coming up this next Saturday. He's figuring a lot of those people are going to stop by and grab some.
Wow. But,
oh, yeah.
It's exciting. Roughly, what's he selling them for? Do you know?
About $75. I don't know what that converts to.
Yeah, no, that's probably about right. So last time I... Last when I was in New York in 2012, we were staying near the Flatiron Building, and I walked around the corner. I walked around the corner to Adorama. Is that right?
Yeah, somewhere near. Yeah, it's quite close.
And I bought 6 months out of date FP100C for $3 a box, and a month to go. 3000B for $5 a box. I thought, well, I should have just, and I think I spent about £150 with, and I just filled up a couple of carry bags, and I wish I'd have bought more and just stored it. And but I wouldn't have bought it thinking, oh, it's not going to be here and I can make money from it. I bought it because I bought it like anything because I loved it and wanted to use it, you know?
Oh, sure. Sure. I mean, had he discovered this box a year ago, it would already be gone.
It's yeah, just one of course, those things. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, even $75 is probably a fair price for the scarcity of it these days.
Oh, yeah.
So going back to, you're going to get into darkroom printing. Have you got a space to build a darkroom at home?
I do currently right now, and I got a lot of space. I've got like a shop currently at my disposal. It's not a dark room per se, but obviously I can blacken out the windows and set up some trays and all that kind of stuff.
Good for you. Did the enlarger come with a number of options for exposing smaller negatives?
Yeah, I have all the masks from, I think, 35, 6x6, all the way up to 4x5.
Okay. Is it a color head or a condenser or cold cathode? Or?
Yeah, I think it's got one of those where it's got the filters built into it.
Okay, very good.
I don't know which one it is, like I said, but it it looks pretty good.
Fantastic. Well, exciting days. Darkroom work does seem, I don't know, it's because when you inhabit these social media bubbles and join Facebook groups called UK Film and Darkroom, you become thinking that the whole world is suddenly getting into darkroom work, which of course they're not, you know.
No. But large prints are awesome. You know, when you put some nice large actual prints, not inkjet, those things are awesome.
Well, there's a separate discussion almost because I was I spent most of last year decorating the house and now we've got all these blank walls, you see, so I've been under some pressure to make some prints to go on the wall, and so I'm now going back to some of my America road trip pictures, and in my head I was going to make I'd got a box of, well, I thought I had a box of 12 by 16 fiber paper in. Oh no, we've lost John. Or he's got bored. Let's see if he can reconnect. So I've got, I'm not going to stop the recording because I might not ever get any of you back. Well, I'll just finish this and we'll see if we can get him back. All the buzzing's gone now. He's left anyway. So that's good. So,
okay. At least it wasn't me then.
No, clearly it was John buzzing away. Yeah, so I'm going to make these 12 by 16. 12 by 16 has always been the biggest paper that I'd had. And it was, and now it's insanely expensive. I thought, I'll go and buy some more. And I like the tactile nature of fiber paper, you know. But I think once it's behind glass, you're hard pressed to tell whether it was made on good quality resin paper or fiber paper. But certainly to hold the prints in your hand, fiber-based double weight paper is just is a beautiful thing. It takes a bit more effort in processing and washing and treatment, but get it right and it's just lovely. But I went to look for a box and it was like £150-160 for 50. Compared to the price of a box of FP3000B, it's a bit of a bargain.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And so I've opted to get I've opted to get resin coated paper because I'm framing it, and so I'm going to make a series of I'm trying to get John back in while I'm talking to you. I'm trying to make a series of 12 by 16 prints. My darkroom can only really accommodate 12 by 16 prints maximum. But the cost of 12 by 16 paper is just insane. And are you back with us, John? I can hear buzzing, so you must be.
Yeah, I'm back. I could hear you guys. You just couldn't.
Oh, could you? Oh, you heard me rambling about fiber paper. Yeah, I was going to buy.
Told me.
I've got a stash of 9.5 inches by 12-inch fiber paper, which is, and I've standardized on that size because it fits inside my heat press nicely. Okay. For flattening and mounting. So whereas 12 by 16, I've got to get out like books and bits of cardboard and stuff. But my darkroom, 12 by 16, I can print and I can do 2 fixer baths if I'm really careful. And then I've got an upright print washer. So I can do 12 by 16, but that's at the limit really of my both size I want to print and my physical capabilities. But I'm tending to use more and more smaller sizes now because I have so much 5x7 paper. I'm just loving the sort of tactile nature of it, the handheld nature of it. I can put it in little boxes. I can type up some notes. I can do projects with little packs of prints, and it's not taking up loads of space. Do you have any thoughts on print size, John?
Yeah, I love small prints, tiny prints. Although I tend to make about 5x7 as well. Most of my prints are around about that size. I think you asked me earlier about my favourite paper. Unfortunately, it's an old one, the Kodak Bromide papers. I absolutely adore the texture on them. But the kind of ones you get now are just not kind of new.
I've got some old Kodak Bromide paper in the darkroom. I sent a load over the pond to a friend a while back, but I kept some back. So I haven't got around to using it yet. I might give it a go.
It's a beautiful. It's like the texture on it's like nothing else. It's so different to anything you see now. Nice. I've got tons of it, but I usually end up printing on the Ilford stuff.
Yeah, me too. And I tend to stick with Ilford Multigrade, the new stuff version 5, which is really lovely. Pearl. I've got some.
Yep.
I've got some of the. They don't call it matte finish, do they? Satin, is it?
Satin, I think.
I bought it by mistake, but that's quite nice. But a pearl is what I tend to use. And then for fibre paper, I've got a stash of multi-grade. I've got quite a lot of foamer paper, which will for lift printing. And I've got some Adox 9.5x12 stuff, and I've got a box of Ilford Warm Tone all sitting in the darkroom. So they'll be for projects, because that's my go-to size fibre paper, really. The 12 by 16, everything becomes a bit more complicated. But I can make some nice road trip pictures in 20 by 16 frames, which I bought from IKEA. Yep. And they're all ready to go up the stairs, you know, like a... And it's been ages since I've printed to make pictures for the wall, you know. But it's one of the joys, really, I think.
I love getting into the darkroom, unfortunately, in the winter. Darkroom's a bit cold. The chemicals get too cold. It usually sits about 4 to 6 degrees out there, so I can't keep the chemicals.
Yeah, mine too. But I tend to, if I do go out there, then I've got a Fotax dish warmer, so I keep the developer up to temperature in that, and the other chemicals I don't worry about really. And I do have a little electric heater just to warm me up, but the cost of electricity. I have a Fotax dish warmer, John, you know, to keep the developer warm.
Oh, right. Okay. Cool. I was
fancy.
So it sits on that, and I've had it for years, you know, and so you can just keep the developer at 20 degrees.
Yep.
And the rest I don't worry about too much.
Have you ever noticed that stop bath is a lot colder than the fixer, right? And if you give it a little shuggle, right? So like create waves in it, you will get waves on the print. You haven't noticed that?
I haven't noticed it, no.
No, I've noticed that a few times.
I'm using, I don't tend to use stop bath in film developing, I haven't done for years, but I do use it in printmaking. And I ran out of smelly, vinegary stuff, you know, acetic acetic acid stuff. But I did have a big bag of citric acid. So I Googled a few things and made a liter of concentrated citric acid stop bath, which I now pour 30 mils into a graduate and mix it up to a liter. And I use that as my stop bath. And at the end, I just throw it away. I've no idea if it works as a stop bath. I can't really tell, but it, you know, I don't know. It's got citric acid in, and that's what odorless stop bath is, I think, largely.
Yeah, it's acidic, so it'll work. No, yeah. Even water works, you know, to be honest.
Oh, of course it does, yeah, yeah. But citric acid, you know, it's great, isn't it? You know, you can use it to, if you're daft enough to want to develop your film in caffeinol, you can use it for that.
I've never been down that road, caffeinol. I like my developers to work for me how I expect them to work, you know.
Yeah,
I'm quite thinking about developers, you know. I'm like, yeah, I want it to do what I think it should be doing rather than worry about the developer working or not.
Yeah,
I'm tempted to do it, but I don't want to ruin good photos trying it.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. Yeah.
people who do it and do it really well make some lovely, you know, some lovely negatives, you know. Yeah. But when people say, oh, well, it's somewhat very, it's dependent on the coffee you use and, you know, whether you're standing on one leg at the time and whether there's an R in the month as to whether you end up getting results. I'm probably being a bit too negative, but.
No, you're actually been quite positive about it.
Am I? Well, also, I think it's terribly bad for the environment as well. So don't use. That's what I like to say. Yeah, yeah. Well, you're using really cheap coffee, aren't you? So who's growing it, and in what part of the world, and how much are they being paid for growing really cheap coffee? You know,
Andrew's on the rand on the day, isn't he? Jeez, okay.
So don't you go telling me that you're, you know, you can't be using film chemicals because it's bad for the environment. Oh, I'll just use coffee. Yeah, go and buy some really cheap coffee from a farmer who's not making shit out of it, right? And they're having to burn down half the rainforest just so you can develop some film.
Yeah, that sounds a bit right. And get lovely golf ball size grain, you know. That's what you really like.
Okay. Yeah, and if anyone else also wants to know, and I also pour all my chemicals down the drain as well. So there.
Well, where else are you supposed to put them?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, along with the household bleach and oven cleaner.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, let's not upset any more people. Alien,
we're on a roll. Alien. Come on.
So I'm very conscious of the time, and we haven't even got to speak about folks that we're interested in talking about in the Lensless Podcast Facebook group. So John,
yeah,
who's been catching your eye in the Lensless Podcast Facebook group?
We're going to give them all of 2 nanoseconds. It's Alistair Prentice.
He was my favourite as well. So you got him before me. I figured someone would talk about him.
Yeah, he's quite a new member. You know, he's just been in the group for a couple of months now, and he's putting in Holger images, and obviously pinhole images, but the portraits are just, they're catching my eye. You know, normally you go flick, flick, flick. Oh yeah, and then something catches your eye. And I was flicking this morning and I seen the picture of the young lady standing outside the old petrol station in Ireland.
Oh, that's the one with the undo, isn't it? Wide.
No, it's the Mia pinhole.
Oh, is it? Yeah. It's six wide.
612. Yeah, 612. It's just really good. Yeah, really caught my eye. And some of his other portraits are just fab. Really good to see.
Well, he's got into a bit of a project, isn't he, really, of both Holger portraits and pinhole portraits, both of which I've, you know, like many of us, I'm sure, we've dabbled with, but he's doing it really well.
He is, yep, absolutely doing it really, really well, which is it's really good to see, and I'm looking forward to seeing even more of them.
He said it on that last picture, the Corey Cannon. Do you remember him? Yeah, I know, some bloke. He commented on it.
Wow.
So it leaves me to wonder whether Corey's like lurking in the background all the time, you know, but he never like some, you know, like a Facebook lurker. I don't know what they call him, but anyway, I think that's what he is. And occasionally he'll say something. So he commented on it. But Alistair said, sorry, did you go on somewhere?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, is he gone again? Must be because of, you know, we must be running out of battery power for the end of the show. Dear John. Anyway, so he said that he'd had trouble using the Holger. It's buzzing. He must be there still.
Oh, now you lost him.
Yeah, buzzing is gone, so John's gone. So he was this picture of the young lady in front of the petrol station. There it is. Alistair says that after chatting to Will Gudgeon about my disappointment in the Holger wide WPC camera, he pointed to his Mir pinhole camera. So I've got a couple of I've only got one Holger wide WPC camera. I gave the other one to Neil Piper, and I keep looking at my Holger wide WPC and thinking I ought to go and give it more love. So I don't exactly know what Alistair's problem was with it. I mean, they can be a bit temperamental with some extreme vignetting, I think. But he doesn't. Alistair refers to his conversation with Will about his disappointment with the Holger Wide.
Yeah.
Doesn't he? And I don't.
I don't know how you could be disappointed with him. They're great cameras. And I know you need to maybe shave the bit round about the edge of it.
Shave the hole, you mean?
Yeah, I didn't want to get down.
Have you shaved
you again, Andrew?
Have you shaved your hole?
Yes. Mine's has been done.
Or did you just bleach it?
Every time. Every time.
Even worse.
But yeah, mine's has been done, so I don't get that extreme vignette. But it's if you don't
Did you do it professionally, or did you do what I did and took a X-Acto knife and just hacked at it?
A razor blade, yeah.
Yeah.
Hack, hack, hack. Round you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really should print something for it. You know, just replace the part, but I haven't got around to it.
And if you don't use a cable release and it doesn't have a long enough throw, sometimes the shutter, the thing that goes away from the pinhole, doesn't always move away far enough, and you get you see the edges of the blades in the picture as well. That's the other thing that can happen.
I think shutter's kind of over-egging what it really is.
Yeah, so. I know. Yeah. So maybe we'll get Alistair if he wants to come and chat with us at some point. The list of guests, I've got a big list of guests, but time is means we'll eventually get through to them. But you know, anyway, Alistair, if you'd like to come on and chat with us at some point, then I'll probably forget that I've asked you.
Yeah, you'll probably forget. Yeah.
I used to be really organised and had a list of lensless guests, you know, 6 years ago when I joined, but I probably do need to start writing it down again. But I did talk about that in the last show a bit about guests. So again, if just to say again, if you're interested, anyone out there listening, just let us know if you want to come on and chat to us.
Yeah. Are we getting Neil on? We need to get him on to talk about his photography sometime. Neil Dorman.
Hasn't he been on?
No, he's not been on.
Are you
yet.
Sure?
Yeah, I'm sure he's not been on yet. Well, I never heard them. I thought I'd listen to all the episodes.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. A collection of cameras, it's just like, whoo! Never seen so many cameras in my puff.
Okay. Well, if you're listening, Neil, John, hook up with him and try and fix a date.
Yeah, I'll message him and see what we can get. Saturdays, he tends to be shooting the local football games and things on a Saturday.
Does he?
Okay. Yeah, I don't know about the after.
Oh, right. Well, I think we're going to have to draw it to a close very shortly because we keep losing John. You still there, Michael?
I am still here. You're right. We're probably long in the tooth about now.
Yeah, I think so.
Back again. I don't know what's happening.
No, well, every time you come on, you're buzzy. That's the first thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's so we know he's there.
Yeah, that's the only way we know you're there. Oh, it's not. Mostly, it's okay. So just before we go, I just want to draw attention. He's gone. I just want to draw attention to the work of David Lingham. And David's only posted a few things in our group, but he does have a website, davidlingham.uk, and he's using a Xero 2000 and developing in FP4 ID11, and he's making prints and he's split toning them with a bit of sepia and selenium probably, and they're just like beautiful classic landscapes, and there's one of a tree and some water, and he's just doing it really, really well. And David lives in Cardiff, and he's an FRPS, a fellow of the Royal Photographic Society, so he must be good. And but he's check out his work. And
well, I'm looking at his beach scene with the rocks on it and the clouds. Very lovely. Very dreamy looking.
Yeah, so they're all a consistent tonality. There's another beautiful one here from December 2023, Brecon, which is an area just near or in South Wales, and it's a little pool of water with some trees in the background and the reflection of the trees in the water, and I think it's just really well done pinhole landscapes, really.
Yeah, so very nice.
They've been catching my eye. So there we are. I think we're probably going to call it a day. I've lost track of the times where we are, so we've been rambling about this, that, and the other. It's been really good to catch up with you, my friend.
And nice talking with you as well.
And John can probably hear us. I'm not going to probably try reconnecting to Mr. Buzzy. call him Buzz Lightyear.
We'll have to chip in and buy him a better microphone.
Well, I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm not really using a microphone. I'm using a dangly thing for my ears, you know, because that's how low tech we are. But the buzzing is there. Well, you know what Scotsmen are like. They're notoriously got deep pockets and short arms. So he's probably he's back. To,
haven't
to,
heard that one, but I like it.
I don't know if he's probably not been hearing anything we've been saying about him. So we're gonna say goodbye, John. Mr. Holger, where can we, where, if folks want to go and hook up with you, you're very mysterious on the internet. Is it best to follow you via like Don's Used Photo Show, or what's the best?
You could probably just find me at Mr. Holger on Instagram or on Twitter, excuse me, X, whatever it's called. You can also see me in the Don's Used Photo YouTube videos as well. Yeah. So.
And you become very busy towards the end of the year during Holger Week.
Very, very, very busy. I would love standing around the shop when people come in and they recognize Todd from the videos, and then they're like staring at me because they don't realize that I'm the other guy in the videos.
Mm. Yep. Okay, John, so you're back just in time to say goodbye. If folks want to hook up with you, Miss Buzz Lightyear, where can they find you?
Lightyear, don't. Adams, right? just stick my name into Google. It's that simple. Put my name into Google, and you'll find me.
There you are.
But exactly. I need to give a shout out to
Mr.
Raniker. You know, he's back in action.
Oh yeah.
Even if he's pinhole cameras.
Oh, okay.
So it's good to see him free again and making cameras. That's really good.
Excellent. Okay. Well, look, it's been lovely catching up with you, John and Michael, and we must do it again sometime.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Later, y'all.
Have you gone again, John? Or are you? He's gone. He left again. Didn't even say goodbye. Well, goodbye, everybody. Thank you.